Hello and welcome back to Utah's new AMA 20. Dr. Liz Hale here. Salt Lake City, your number to call in for questions regarding sexual intimacy and marriage, 570-1820. Utah County, 470-1820. Ogden, North Davis County, 670-1820. Appreciate all your emails. You can continue to email me at lizh@utahama20.com. I will get to those as soon as I can. Sometimes I'll be able to bleed them into the subject matter. Other times I may answer them just with a reply. So anyway, nonetheless, I'm glad to know that you're out there. It's nice to know that you are there, that I'm not alone here. I can't see you. I can only imagine who you are and what life is like for you. I know many of you listen to us at work, and it's hard for you to call in, so I appreciate those emails. And those of you who are at home, you're in and out of the room, you're running errands, you're taking care of little ones, you're in and out of the car doing a sales call, just nice to know that you're there. It's always a great pleasure to bring on Laura Brotherson. Hi, Laura. Thanks for being there. And again, as you know, Laura, she's going to be with us the latter part of Thursdays. We're going to try this for a good month and enjoy just taking from her wonderful insight and wisdom. She's written the book, And They Were Not Ashamed, all about strengthening marriage through sexual fulfillment. But have you heard our other hour, Laura?
A little bit.
With
yes.
Ari Brown. She's a delight, and she is a head pediatrician. She's the official spokesperson for the American Academy of Pediatrics, and her book is just chock full of wisdom. We talked a little bit how sometimes pediatricians are really the first ones to learn about how it's going with mom and dad, first ones to ask about depression and whatnot. But if you're a mom who's just had a baby, or are you wondering if you're ever going to want to have sex again? Or maybe you're a dad and you're having a hard time adjusting to your partner's new role as a mother. Perhaps you both still have the same desires for each other, but now there's just no time. And when there is no time, you're too tired. then there are the sudden interruptions of a baby that's supposed to be sleeping. So, oh my goodness, what's a couple to do? You have personal experience with this. Mine is more professional. Do you remember those early days?
Oh my goodness, Liz, it's just a flood of memories coming back.
Because you're a mother of three.
Oh my goodness. My heart goes out to these new moms. I mean, there is a few things that are more challenging, I think, than being a new mom. And every time, it's quite an adjustment. Even when you've had the experience before, it's still new, and it's challenging.
Mm-hmm. Many parents wonder when it's okay to resume having sex after having a baby. And most doctors suggest waiting until after a postnatal checkup before sex. And sometimes that's 6 weeks. That may be even plenty long, and you could check with your doctor sooner than that if you prefer. But certain things that complicate that are episiotomies or C-sections. So every case is rather different.
Yes.
Lubrication problems also. I mean, your body's just gone through heck.
Yes.
It's just gone through turmoil and, you know, been inside out. And of course, it's going to take some time, but it doesn't mean that we shouldn't go back to touching and loving and caressing.
Yes, Liz, that's what I think is a real potential blessing for that time of your marriage, because so often you hear from a lot of women, particularly, where they don't get enough of that non-sexual touch. And this can be a really good time to kind of reawaken that and to take advantage of just that cuddling and that affection. And to be honest, it also can be a great time to enjoy some of the foreplay without having the expectation that it's going to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. That is such a treat for women particularly.
Yes.
Hopefully the men can, you know, endure that.
Of course. I mean, I think we all need touch, you know, but maybe as women, we're just a little bit more tuned into that.
Well, we particularly are more attuned to our non-sexual needs for touch.
There you go.
And so that's why that's a bigger thing.
There could be many reasons why new moms or dads lose interest in sex, right?
I mean, you bet.
It might be as simple as being tired or feeling unappreciated. But I guess if you think that your sex drive is something to be concerned about, you should consult with your doctor. Sometimes a low sex drive can be hormone related or can be symptoms of postpartum depression. Mm-hmm. We talked just a bit about that. Such guilt, Laura, when you have this new baby and you're tired or you're weepy and you're wondering, oh my gosh, will life ever be the same?
Sure.
And women and men too just need to be so much easier on themselves.
Really?
This too shall pass, but it's got to be. Any kind of change comes with a huge adjustment.
Well, it's interesting if you think about probably one of the number one characteristics of new moms is sleep deprivation. And it was so funny because I came across an article once where they talked about how sleep deprivation was one of the primary tools they used in warfare with, you know, enemies and, you know, trying to get information out of them. And I
thought,
isn't that appropriate?
I feel so lousy without sleep. I mean, that's the one thing I've got to make sure I get.
Yeah.
Go ahead, excuse me.
I was just going to say, I really encourage a couple of things as I was thinking about what to suggest for people is that I really encourage moms to make sleep a priority.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you don't have to be doing something else, instead of, you know, trying to do the dishes even or do the laundry or something, you know, you try to put that sleep first. And I really encourage, especially in that first 6 weeks where you either bring in some outside help or, you know, hire somebody to help clean if you can, or keep your mom or friends around, because you really need to take care of yourself so that you have time for those most mm-hmm. important things.
Sleep is a big one, whether you've just had a baby or not, isn't it? Seems like that's the number one criteria that women have, or number one complaint, I guess they would say, is like, oh my gosh, I just barely laid down, was trying to fall asleep, and he was interested in a little activity.
Yeah.
So I think this is where men can come in when they understand and they think ahead a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, and they say, oh, okay, you know, tonight's kind of the night. I'd like to visit with my wife about that. Say, honey, how would you like a date in bed? You know, what can I do to help you get prepared for 9 o'clock in bed, a 9 o'clock bedtime? And maybe that husband then takes over some of those typical chores that she has. Anything to help her get to bed a little earlier so she can be refreshed and still somewhat awake. Otherwise, women just typically seem to push themselves and push themselves till they just fall down dead exhausted.
Yeah. And the more a husband and a wife, this is probably one of the most important things for couples to understand when they first have a baby, the more they can work as a team mm-hmm. and to be a partnership. And that includes husbands really stepping up to the plate and covering a lot of the bases that the wife used to do and could do. And it also means that the wife needs to be attentive, that a husband still needs your love and attention. And you know, even though there's a new baby, you can't just always put a husband on the shelf, but they also can understand that things are going to be different as well.
Exactly. And may you never stop that teamwork, right?
Never.
Because that is the best aphrodisiac. Weren't you saying that, Laura, a couple times ago, that housework is the best aphrodisiac, or taking care of the kids?
And Liz, you know, it might not even be specifically the housework, but just the feeling of partnership.
Great.
When, I mean, it's like Michelle Winer Davis in her book, The Sex-Starved Marriage, where she says, boy, if you want to find a woman who's got her fair share of headaches, find one that feels like she's doing more than her share of the household responsibilities. But you switch that around and get her, that woman, to feel like, I have a real partner here. We are a team. You can bet she will find the time to make her husband a priority. I mm-hmm. believe that.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Sounds like a good book. I have not read that one. I love her work, though.
Very good.
And so you recommend that one as well?
Mm-hmm.
Good. We'd love to hear from you, your questions, your concerns about this. I know it's a delicate topic. Go ahead and email me if you prefer. LizH@UtahAM820.com, Salt Lake City, your number 570-1820, Utah County 470-1820, of course, North Davis County 670-1820. Visiting with Laura Brotherson, as we always do this time of day on Thursdays. Her book, And They Were Not Ashamed, Strengthening Marriage Through Sexual Fulfillment. But just before we leave the area of sex after birth is probably going to be the last thing on your mind.
Yeah.
Right? When you've just gone through labor, talk about all the things that contribute to a decline in sex after the birth of your baby. So just know that that's natural.
Yeah.
Labor is a physically exhausting and highly emotional process. It's only natural that your body would need some time to recover. And in addition, your hormone levels change significantly after birth. And of course, you'll need time to adjust for your new baby. Do await healing, though, especially if you have incurred a cesarean, stitches, or a forceps delivery. And let's just go over some of those things again, of the reasons why you may not feel like or enjoy sex. That could include just plain old, as we've talked about, tiredness and general sleep deprivation, general feelings of discomfort in your body. Mm-hmm. Pain or tightness due to an episiotomy or stitches. This can sometimes take months to subside, so just be patient. There's less lubrication for up 8 to 10 weeks after the birth, particularly if you're breastfeeding. So do keep in mind a lubricating jelly from the pharmacy may be very necessary. And, you know, so many women feel this, Laura, breaks my heart. They just feel so unattractive because of all the physical changes after childbirth. Exercise can help this. And I don't mean just helping your body get back into shape, although that's so pertinent, but it helps your mood, helps you elevate that, right? Go ahead.
You know, Liz, what you're talking about doesn't even apply only to after childbirth. There's a real concern with with just body image issues. And that is really something that you have to internally work through and get to a place. It doesn't matter how you look, you can be okay with how you look and be able to enjoy that intimate relationship still.
Women face that more than men,
yes,
don't they?
Yes. And men can do, our husbands can do a lot to reassure us and to be vigilant at helping us to know, I love you no matter how you look, and I want you no matter how you look.
Mm-hmm.
And that really is how they feel most of the time.
And I guess men, I mean, I guess I have heard some men worry about size or, you know, their own love handles, mm-hmm. but it seems like it's more problematic for women.
Yes,
it's
certainly
more interfering. Men seem to get over that. They feel that, think that, and then they could move on, where women, it can sometimes impede that sexual relationship.
Liz, I was just going to say, one thing that I think was always, was very helpful for me is to understand I knew I needed a husband and a father for my children as much as anything in the whole world to raise that child. And so it helped to make it easier for my husband to remain a priority, because we've talked before, and, you know, Oprah did a show about it, where it can be easy for a mom to kind of almost move into mother mode and wife mode almost ends. But it's very important that women be careful not to do that as well. Keep the balance between your mothering and your wifering, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Loss of libido is just so common, though, right? There's nothing wrong with you. It does take time to come back. So there are no hard and fast rules about when to resume your sex life. But the tips for sex after pregnancy are to talk to each other about how you feel. Communication, 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 right? Be gentle with each other, and just take time. Don't worry about it. Spend more time on kissing, caressing, foreplay, just like you said, Laura. I appreciate that. And your hormone levels will eventually get back on track. Your vagina won't naturally lubricate itself right away, but that eventually will come back.
Yeah.
Take a warm bath, massage, lubricant, all that can help. Try different positions if you feel discomfort. And again, if you've had episiotomy or stitches, let your partner know if you experience tightness or pain. Just let them know and be gentle with each other first and foremost.
You bet.
Anything else you'd add to that? Does that pretty much cover it,
those,
my friend?
Those are very, very good. And just, you know, like you said, talking about it and sharing in this very sacred time almost.
Oh, it is.
You brought a new life into the world, and that's something that you created together. And so keep that togetherness.
Exactly.
Amongst all of it, and then you can get over these little bumps and, you know, things
good
that come along.
Point. It should be just some of the best times, and I think that's why people feel so guilty.
And yet, Liz, we have to say, it should be the best time, but it also is challenging, and
it
so don't be hard on yourself when it is very hard.
Yeah, that's a good point. Then the best is yet to come, right? But you don't want to rush any step. Try to just enjoy the moment as it is. Try to enjoy the body changes. Marvel at the body and what your body just did, what you did as a couple. Same thing if you've adopted. Isn't it a marvel that this little spirit, this little precious baby is now yours, and you have this huge responsibility? It can be overwhelming, but how thrilling. I'm so happy for those of you with the family. Welcome back to Utah's new AMA 20. Dr. Liz Hale here. Of course, it is the topic, sexual intimacy in marriage, as we're going to have every Thursday, 10:45 to 11:45, with Laura Brotherson. And Laura, welcome back to the show.
Thank you,
Liz.
As
you know, Laura is the author of And They Were Not Ashamed, Strengthening Marriage Through Sexual Fulfillment. You can check out her website also, www.strengtheningmarriage.com. There's a free newsletter on there. So I highly recommend that. But we'd love to hear the questions from you, those that are on your heart and mind. I know it is a big issue for many couples. It's the primary problem in relationships. Isn't that right, Laura?
You bet.
So please do call 470-1820, 570-1820, or 670-1820. I appreciate all your emails, lizh@utahama20.com. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. And I know this is a subject matter that's heavy on hearts, because there's 40 to 60% of all couples struggle with a sexual problem at some time in the course of their relationship. Sex and relationship problems go hand in hand. So if you are married, I know that one time or another you have faced that. And in most cases, sexual and relationship functioning can be improved with the proper treatment. Maybe that means a diagnosis from a professional, but typically just means better education and communication. But working together, of course, you can resolve those likely problems, and I truly believe that. The average individual couple waits 6 years before seeking therapy for sexual concerns. 6 years, that's way too long.
Way too long.
Denial, hoping time will help. It's a negative stigma, lack of knowledge of where to go for help, and just plain discomfort discussing such private matters can all add up to this delay. But waiting, my friends, magnifies and exacerbates the negative consequences of a sexual problem. There are benefits to early intervention, and here's an opportunity for intervention right here on Thursdays, 10:45 to 11:45. We were talking about sex after baby and a little bit about postpartum depression, Laura, and you yourself have been very honest about your own experience.
Yeah.
I'll let you share that with the listeners.
Well, you know, it's we've talked, you know, just before about some of those hormonal changes and just all of the challenges. And for me, you know, after the birth of my third child, I happened to be blessed with that wonderful experience of postpartum depression, and what a throw your life for a loop that is. And you know, it's important for people to realize that these things can happen. I mean, depression can happen to anyone with enough stressors in their lives and enough of the, you know, circumstances that can cause it. And to understand that it can happen and to get help with it or to address it and look into it is so vital. What makes me very concerned about all of us is sometimes we maybe don't feel like everything's right, but it's not really bad enough to really do anything about. And so we kind of just go through the motions of life at this low level when we're meant to be at a much greater functioning. And so it's a real... Mm-hmm. I really encourage people to be okay with getting help and to addressing those kind of things.
Was that diagnosed fairly early for you, Laura? Did you suffer for some time?
Well, not yet. I mean, I have a background in this, marriage and family stuff. And so I happen to have a lot of things going on at the time, which is what usually happens. We had just moved into a brand new home. We were just into a brand new church, our ward. They had just called me to be president of the women's organization in our church.
Oh, boy.
And I had a brand new baby. And so that was just, you get enough factors, and it can, you know, just snap for anybody. I knew something wasn't right, but I didn't have time to address it because of everything that was going on. And so I kind of just went through the motions for a lot of that. And that's what concerns me is, you know, we don't really... It's hard to identify sometimes, and sometimes we're at that state of postpartum. You're so tired, and you've got so much going on, and I even had extra things going on that it's just hard to get to it.
You did. I have to ask you, though, where did you even start? I mean, I'm overwhelmed just hearing the litany of things that were on your plate.
Yeah. Well, this is what was kind of sad for me is that, you know, everyone just kind of looked at me like, you have every right to be falling apart, you know? So it was hard to really go, okay, I need to do something, because it's like, Laura, I can understand why you're struggling. You don't get any sleep. You're, you know, doing all these things and having a baby and running a relief study. And I think for a lot of people, just the best place to start is even just with your doctor and just say, I don't know if I'm okay. But the thing is that some doctors are really attentive to that, and some aren't, and some will just stick you on a pill, but not really. I don't think a pill alone is all that's needed, and so I hate for people to just get a pill and feel a little better and then be done with it, and they don't really get to the underlying stuff. Mm. So this is where I've become a big, big advocate of greater self-awareness and some of this internal work that we don't even know how to talk about because it sounds like psychobabble to so many.
And
but if you don't go there, you're not going to get to the root of the problem.
Yeah, so true. If you're just tuning in, welcome to Utah's new AM 820. This is the Dr. Liz Hale Show. I have the privilege on Thursdays of visiting with Laura Brotherson, author of Then They Were Not Ashamed, Strengthening Marriage Through Sexual Fulfillment. We'd love to hear your questions and concerns. 470-1820, Utah County. 570-1820, Salt Lake County, 670-1820, North Davis County. I'm sure you're saying it right along with me, right? Those of you who are tired of hearing that, but I don't want you to miss those numbers because I'd love you to take advantage of the opportunity to share your from your heart and your head about what's really going on in your sex life and what we can do to help, because it could be one of the greatest blessings in your life. And you're not alone when you have some frustration about it and some questions. It's just so common, sadly common.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
going yeah, go ahead.
There's no shame involved in some of these, you mm-hmm. know, challenges that we
there
go
ought
through.
Not be. That's true. Going back to your story for a minute, I'm hoping that when people find themselves in that situation, that they will not have so much guilt where they don't say, you know what, I cannot do this all.
Yes.
We've got to make some changes here. And I, you know, I'm an advocate sometimes of saying no, thank
yes.
you. Even if it comes to a church calling, that's a
yes.
very personal decision.
Yes.
But I think sometimes we are these human doings and these machines, and we have forgotten the personal side of life. And guess what suffers? Our marriages and our families.
Yeah.
The whole premise of being a Christian, right? That's
yeah.
what is so important. So I'm a huge advocate, Laura, of saying, you know what, enough is enough. I've got to
yeah.
take some things off my plate here tonight,
mm-hmm.
or today, rather, is just not the right time and season.
Yes, exactly. And in my case, I actually had the calling before the baby, and so it was
sure.
kind of like, oh, okay, well, I can probably do this. Whoa, wait, no, I can't.
Sure.
But, you know, I think there's more of even a cultural issue involved here, is that, you know, we reward people for being selfless and for serving.
I know we do.
We almost talk as if service can heal all things. And we're kind of ingrained with that, and that's what's a little bit challenging, is because sometimes you do need to say no, and you need to say, no, I need to take care of me for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But that's so looked down upon, and we don't almost give ourselves a right to take care of ourselves first,
mm-hmm.
that's what concerns me a lot.
Yeah, and that's why we have probably so many women facing depression. They're
yes.
the ones, it seems like
yes.
we are the ones, pardon me,
yes.
for having the harder time saying, you know what, can't do it. Got to yes. take something off. I can't meet that need right now. Time is such a precious commodity.
Yeah.
And then there's things we can do to free up time, regardless of your situation. And
sure.
putting yourself first is certainly key. But, you know, try shopping online or mm-hmm. just don't send Christmas cards. That's a real easy one for me,
yeah.
since I'm not already sending them. Hire a house cleaner if you can. Get a college student who needs a little bit of extra money, or gardeners and babysitters. Order takeout. And, you know, no one's going to die within reason if we do takeout now and then. Shop and cook in bulk. Get comfortable with a little clutter in the house.
Yeah.
And say no to those super mom tendencies. Ask for help from family, friends, other moms, and babysitters. Just for a
you
couple
know,
of hours. Yeah.
Liz, one of the things that was very helpful for me is that we just got to the point where my husband was on duty every Wednesday night from 6 o'clock on. And I either closed myself in my office to, you know, work on something I wanted to do, or close myself in the bedroom to read a book, or
yes.
just something to have a break from all of what was on my back.
Gosh, well said.
And I think that when you communicate, when you're trying to be a partnership and working towards that, I think that husbands can carry some of that if we can be brave enough to ask.
And how did that make you feel toward your husband when he kind of protected that time for you?
Oh my gosh. I adore this man.
Adored him, yes.
Oh, I don't even know how to say it. But
that's great.
But also, I really encourage moms to find one or two specific things that they can say no to or to take off of their plate.
That's great. We're going to talk to Julie now. Laura, hi, Julie. You're live with the Dr. Liz Hale Show. Welcome.
Thanks, Dr. Hale.
Hey, appreciate you calling in. You had a comment today for us.
I do. I am also a therapist, and I work with women. And I just wanted to share something about how I frame the selfless versus selfish predicament that a lot of women are in.
Wonderful,
feeling
please.
Like if I take care of myself, then I'm being selfish.
And neglecting, and yes.
Right. And I always like to say, well, being selfless, that assumes that you have a self to give up. So to give up on self without actually having developed a self to sacrifice.
Oh, yes.
And that seems to click for people and help women give themselves permission to develop a self, which is, you know, what you're talking about, Laura, you know, taking that time to nurture your own needs. And that has seemed to help with my clients, so I just thought I'd call in and share.
I think that is great. You know,
thank
even
you,
that
Julie.
Scripture of loving thy neighbor as thyself, it's like, oh, he's already assumed that we love ourselves. I think that's something very innate that we don't have a hard time doing. But when we realize that and are given permission by a great therapist like you, Julie, to say, hey, you know, you got to have a self first to be selfless or selfish.
Right. And you'll have more to sacrifice at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't sacrifice something that you don't actually have yet.
Do men have that same problem, Julie?
In my experience, they do, but I think it's a lot trickier for women. I just think the cultural expectations for women are different, and we have more, we feel more responsibility for our relationships and for taking care of others. And not that men don't feel that, but I just think the weight of it is heavier on on women a lot of times, and I think that makes it trickier.
I think you're right. It seems to be social and also somewhat innate. You know, when you look at little girls playing with their dollies, they're very concerned about their dollies. I remember my niece Maggie going, oh, don't cry, don't cry. You know, so upset about a dolly crying.
Right.
And I don't see boys as much concerned about that. You know,
right.
They want to get the trucks in the mud, and that's all well and good. But we're just different. We're wired differently.
Yeah, Laura, I agree.
Laura, were you going to pop in?
Julie, that's an excellent comment. The way I've described it also, along with what you've said, is I call it the empty bucket syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what happens when a lot of us, you know, just keep giving and giving and giving, and we are run out. And not only just run out, like it's not just simple to just kind of refill it. Very often we also have holes in our bucket. And this
Isn't that a great analogy?
You know, yeah.
And this is what I was talking about before, where if you don't get to that internal stuff that I'm sure you deal with a lot, Julie, as a counselor, you know, if you don't get to those internal things, then the holes never get filled. And so what we do to try to refill ourselves, whether it be exercise or whatever, you might be putting it into either bucket, but guess what? It's going right out because of the holes.
Yeah, so, I love that analogy. I'm gonna borrow that.
You can have it. You bet.
I know, Julie. I use that a lot too. And when I learned it from Laura, it's like, oh, you got to seal up those holes first, and then whatever you do is going to make a contribution. A lot of people use that with the religious aspects, right? If I just pray more, read scriptures more, fast more, but it all is kind of going in vain.
That's what's so dangerous. Is if we only stay with that, we will continue to have a lot of our women, particularly, and even our men, that keep struggling and won't even say anything about it because they get told, well, go home and pray more, or go home and
A personal or a spiritual weakness is how it's often framed. And,
and I
think you're so right that I think, you know, if you're coming from a position of faith, those can be really helpful, but
absolutely,
they can't solve everything, and that's why there are, you know, great therapists like Dr.
You.
It's when, and you, Julie.
Like yours.
So it's when the bucket is sealed, the holes are sealed, that prayer, fasting, scripture, that does
that's
take effect.
That's when it helps. You betcha.
But first things first.
Or you can ask for help to fix the bucket.
Yeah.
While you're doing, you know, but just thinking, well, if I just prayed longer or if I just read more, it'll fix the bucket. That doesn't happen as we all know. So,
that's right, Julie. Gosh, I'm glad you're out there. I appreciate you calling
your
in.
Discussion. Laura, I love your book and have recommended it to many clients and appreciate your articles. And I'm on your newsletter list, so
wonderful.
Thanks for all your work.
Hey, that's great, Julie.
Appreciate that, Julie.
Thanks for calling in. Keep up the good work, my friend. Bye,
thanks,
Julie.
Dr. Liz.
Bye-bye now. Bye.
You know, Liz, just if you want to mention real quick, I do have an article on my website that really can help people understand all of what we're talking about, because we're just really touching the surface here. But I talk about what it's like and what I did to overcome it and all of these things. And it's such – that is the book I thought I would write first, is How to Overcome Depression.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like the Lord obviously wanted this one, so that's why we did it. But it is available on the
So
the
go
news
to
page.
www.strengtheningmarriage.com and click on what article?
It's in the news page, and then it's called A Light in the Darkness, Finding Healing
in the Darkness.
And Wholeness from Depression.
Wonderful. So many can relate to that.
Yeah.
You know, and then we're given so many options on medications from our doctors.
Yes.
And there is I think, a small group that really can be benefited by antidepressants.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to that at all. Very often, Liz, if you think about it, very often the antidepressant is needed to get things mm-hmm. secure, solid enough that you can then go to work at the real stuff, which is that underlying stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not opposed to that, but, you know, you got to do more than just take a pill.
That's right. SSRIs are so common, but there is so much more to it, the behavior
yeah.
changes that need to be made. And some of the natural alternatives, you found one yourself that worked.
Excellent.
And
yeah.
Sam E. And I think that if you want to know more about Sam E., you can type that in. And,
yep.
of course, go to Laura's article and you know more about that natural product.
Yeah.
So, oh, excellent. All good stuff. Boy, we women face some difficult things, and so do men.
Yes,
you know, we're
too.
All doing the best we can, but different things affect us differently. You know?
Yeah, my heart goes out to these poor men that have to live with us
mine
women.
Mine too, mine too. We need each other, don't we? We need them to be patient and understanding and also patient and understanding with ourselves. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the sexual female dysfunction that's really kind of hot in the news right now and to give a little more understanding to what that's all about. All right, stay close. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Utah's new AM 820. Dr. Liz Hale here. Kirsten just getting me some more hot tea. I tell you, get those frogs in your throat, and that's just the best thing, is that hot herbal tea. I love it, Laura. Did you ever have that?
Oh, you bet.
Oh, my goodness. I think I inherited that little thing from my mother. She used to always struggle with that frog in the throat. You know, there were some thoughts on low sexual desire. A big article came out in New York Times. Whole section dedicated. It was called Not Tonight in big letters, and it shows this husband looking at his wife, and she's laying with her back towards him, just going, oh, I just don't want to do this. Lots of interesting thoughts from that. And of course, we'd all like a quick fix pill. We talked about that. But that is not always a real problem or the underlying problem. We can take a pill, but if the real problem is a relationship issue, for example, then you know, you're ignoring or discounting a negative core belief, and you can't really solve the problem long term. The whole idea was on testosterone and how testosterone therapy could indeed help women to feel a little bit more like men, a little more interested in the sexual functioning and in the bedroom. And yet, is that really the good place to start? And you had some really pertinent thoughts on that, Laura. I wanted to turn that over to you a little bit on what you think of women going to testosterone cream or the patch. What is that, the first place to start?
See, you know, in reading that article, it was very interesting that this woman basically had, you know, felt frustrated with all of this and went to this, you know, sex clinic, and that's great. I'm sure she learned a lot of great things. But I just always kind of hesitate to go with, you know, a pill first,
mm-hmm.
Because it just seems to be kind of where we go when we want a quick fix. And we might be able to get kind of an initial rush or something, but I don't think we get to the long-term problems. And I'm all about solving things on a long-term, permanent, if you will, kind of basis.
Right.
I don't want just a little fix to get us over a little hump sometimes. But I think there are so many other issues that couples can look into first, and you've talked about some of them, just even getting educated first. There's inhibitions, there's negative core beliefs, there's lack of understanding about intimacy and the intricacies and the complexities. There are just a lot of places to go to kind of address things before you go to a medical approach.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see where?
Absolutely. I think sometimes it could be a factor of testosterone. But you know what's interesting, Lauren, in that article was that the placebo, mm-hmm. the other pill, almost did just as well.
Well, and another
thing.
It
was really close.
Mm-hmm. And another thing that Dr. Laura Berman talks about, who the article was about, who's a sex therapist, you know, she talks about that, like, after pregnancy and birth and during breastfeeding, when you've got that oxytocin or that bonding hormone chemical going through your body, it has a tendency to decrease testosterone. So if that's the case, there might be a reason why you're low on testosterone, and in some cases, that might be on purpose. And they don't know the long-term effects of taking testosterone, and it's not FDA approved yet. So it's a little bit risky, in my opinion, to go there first.
Do you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the same, basically, and I think I shared with you the comment that we got from another woman on our website, but she basically had the exact same story as the woman in the New York Times article, but from, you know, getting educated and, you know, overcoming some negative core beliefs and some of these other things, she was able to kind of come to the same result. Didn't have to fly to Chicago and didn't have to take a potentially risky hormone. So, you know, that I think that there are just some other things to start with first, and you know, I can, don't mean to give you a couple of these ideas.
You bet. Go ahead, Laura.
So I would say, you know, one of the first things is to get a little bit more self-aware about your own internal beliefs, your conditioning, your teachings. What are your feelings and thoughts about it? Because remember, for women especially, sex begins in the mind. They have to be able to say, yes, let's move forward. And if they've got inhibiting beliefs like, am I doing something wrong, or sex is messy, or whatever, then there's an inhibitor right there. And there's a great cause of low sexual desire right there.
I think that's such a great place to start, Laura.
Yeah.
And that's always, I think, a more difficult place to go, too, is to really have that conversation with yourself. And you can do that by writing it out, like journaling, or go and honestly have an out loud conversation with yourself in some place that's private.
Yeah.
In your car, in the mirror, that's fine, in your closet, anywhere where you can start to hear yourself talk. And you start to realize, gosh, I really didn't realize I had that thought about sexuality or my own body. So coming to terms, first things first, and that's starting with yourself. Great.
And the thing that's an issue with this that I really want people to get is that if you, this is why the quick fix is a little bit concerning, is because it will make it so that people are less likely to do the harder work that's the better work, if you will, like this first step we've just talked about.
Okay, good. Okay, then what's next?
So secondly, then, you've got to understand the intricacies of the female sexual response. Even in the article, they talked about how much more complex the female response is, and it is. But if you're not aware of that as a woman or as the husband, then, well, no wonder you can't make things work very well, because you don't know how they're supposed to work in the first place.
Women blame themselves so much.
Yeah.
And men do, too. Men often blame women, right? You're never in the mood, not just tonight, but last night and all the other nights.
And, you know, I can't really blame these poor husbands either, because they look at their wives and think, well, I assume you should be like me, and you're not.
That's right.
So what's wrong with you?
That's right. And she's saying, what is wrong with me? Something is.
And sadly, a lot of women have bought into that, where they're like, oh, my goodness, I am not this always ready to go woman. I must be broken.
Yeah.
And what a devastating feeling that is, when it's simply not true.
Mm-hmm.
We're just wired so differently.
Mm-hmm.
But this is why I spend a lot of time teaching these differences in the female sexual response. And number one would be to just understand that women need warm-up preparation time. In fact, add that in as a full sexual response phase before you even get started. And then to understand that very often women need to feel arousal before they feel desire.
And that is such a great point for conversation, is what warms you up, basically, honey?
Yep.
You know what I mean? And it might start early in the morning, as far as what the husband does to help her get off on her day on a good foot. A good start. So it seems like women need to be made love to all day long.
They do.
There's things that you could deposit in her bank account that would make such a difference when she is ready at that nighttime to express her love physically.
Yeah. And I feel a little bad for men when they learn that for the first time. They're like, oh, my goodness, you guys are high maintenance, sort of. But, you know, the Lord, God made us the way he did on purpose.
But, you know, I think so many men will do anything, Laura, and they're doing all these other things, maybe in the direction that's really not that helpful.
Yeah.
So if they knew what they could do that would lead to the end result, I mean, who wouldn't?
Yeah.
Who wouldn't then abide and say, okay, boy, if that leads to that result, I'm happy to do that.
And that kind of leads us to the third suggestion, which is you need to understand the sexual differences between men and women. You need to understand that women have a harder time to warm up to the sexual intimacy if they don't feel the emotional and spiritual connection first. And you need to understand how men are. They have a harder time providing that emotional connection if they can't really get through the physical stuff first.
Mm-hmm.
So look at what a complex that is right there. So men need to feel that physical intimacy before they can get to the emotional. So it takes two people stretching in ways that are not natural for them to make this come together. Okay? Fourth thing to talk about is to just get some good books to read together about this so that it makes it really easy to talk about it. You don't have to bring it up. It doesn't have to be personal. It's like you're reading a book and you go, oh, honey, is that what you think? Or is that what's going on with you? Or what do you think about that? And it's very simple to then open up an effective conversation. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm.
And not one that's full of defenses and accusations.
Right.
And pointing the finger.
And like the woman in this article and in the woman that put a comment on our page, she just said we would talk and talk and talk about it till we were blue in the face, but neither of us knew what to do differently. Neither of us knew what was wrong. And so sometimes conversation alone is not helpful if you don't have some added information to put into the conversation.
Oh, exactly.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So that's critical. And number five, you really need to look at the relationship issues. Dr. Berman, in her article and also in my book, I talk about the three different areas that you run into. There's physiological issues, there's the psychological issues, and then there are relationship factors. And so you really kind of need to almost go through the list of potential areas and see which ones click for you and say, okay, you know what? This is one. Let's work on this. And that might be something like the wife is kind of critical of the husband, and so he, you know, isn't very warm and loving to her, and so she doesn't feel emotionally close, and so she doesn't want to, you know, it's just this kind of cycle that somewhere it needs to be broken.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. All these good things.
And just kind of what we've talked about, we're going through this list and learning what makes each other feel loved is so critical that we've talked about before, so that you know how your wife can feel warmed up to you and so that you know how your husband can feel loved so that he wants you to feel warmed up.
I was just going to tell listeners, the Berman Center that Laura keeps referring to is in Chicago. It's a spa-like woman's sexual health and menopause management clinic. Interestingly enough, it's run by, of course, Laura Berman, and they were so busy they couldn't really even talk to us. I mean, there was a thought that maybe they could come on today for a little bit just to talk about the testosterone patch and the cream and really what she's finding. But isn't that interesting that the moment this article comes out in Women's Health in the New York Times, she's inundated. I mean, it gives us an idea, Laura, right, that this is such an integral problem for so many people. Sometimes you feel alone or there's something wrong with you. But again, it goes back to that statistic of 40-60% of all couples face a sexual problem at some point in time in their marriage. So you're not alone.
And Liz, people, I mean, they talk about this in the article as well, that it's pretty well established that this sex in marriage is right at the top of the list of things that are causing divorce and dissatisfaction.
That's right. Sexual incompatibility.
And that should be a wake-up call for us. And this is why I think it's so valuable what you're allowing to happen here every Thursday, where we can have a really open an honest conversation in a very appropriate way.
That can take such pressure off women and men, I think, just to realize, let's just accept, psychologically speaking, physically speaking, women are more complex with that. And so, again, unfortunately, the focus goes on women, but that's the good news also, is that we know where to direct our thoughts and our understanding and our education so that it can make a difference in a relationship. And marriage requires making love. It absolutely does.
Yeah.
There are
It's not even just a requirement or a commandment, but it's the pinnacle. It's the the consummation of everything else in the most. I mean, it's one of the greatest gifts that we've been given. I call it God's wedding gift to husband and wife.
Yeah, there are those rare instances, either due to something going on physically in the body where you're not able to have intercourse, or because of spinal cord injury where intercourse is not possible. So does that mean that your marriage will be hurt? Not if you do other things that are touch-oriented, that are more sexual, something that is satisfying. I have a good friend, and she and her husband have never consummated their marriage. And I don't know the details of that so much, not any of my business, but I know that they have a very fulfilling love life.
Yeah.
They do other things, so it's not to add guilt if you're not able to have the actual physical act of intercourse, but the fact that we touch, that we're close, that we're communicating, talking about the matters of the heart, what a gift that is for marriage, and God-given. and so needed. So look at Laura's book again, my friends, and They Were Not Ashamed. It's all about strengthening marriage through sexual fulfillment, Laura Brotherson. Her website is www.strengtheningmarriage.com. Go and look at the free newsletters and all the information she has on there, not just on postpartum depression, but so many other things. And then Meridian Magazine, I love the article you just did recently, Laura.
Yes.
It's actually the Adventure of Marriage.
Oh, I love that one.
I love it, too. And you talk about marriage as a surprise grab bag. Isn't that the truth?
Yes.
I remember this book that I picked up many years ago and as a marriage and family therapist that said, "You're not what I expected."
Ditto for every couple.
And neither am I. That's right. You're not what I expected. I know that I'm not for you what you expected.
Yes.
But you never know what's going to happen, do you? You never know about you and your husband didn't plan on your depression.
No, heavens no.
We don't plan on sexual problems or difficulties or communication breakdowns or injury or death, heaven forbid. But life does happen, and you don't know what you're walking into.
And it's amazing what a blessing our challenges really can be. And I know that is not helpful when you're in the midst of it, but they can be such a blessing for us in so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at just the couples. I mean, there are couples that have to go for long periods of time without sexual intimacy. And do they still create a wonderful relationship?
That's right.
You bet they do.
Especially those that are separated by maybe husbands or wives who are at war.
Yeah.
Or in Iraq, and they're here, and how to
or
keep that up. And that's right, so many things. I wanted to read something that you wrote about here, because I have felt this way so much in private practice. As I've always said, Laura, half of my practice, they were single people wishing they could be married. You know, wishing they could find that prince or that princess, and they'd be so happy. And then the other half, they were married couples thinking, you know, maybe we ought to both be single. Maybe that's the answer. And so you write here just so eloquently, "Some who have not yet entered the adventure of marriage stand at the sidelines longing to trade in their current pain of loneliness for the joys that marriage affords. They're temporarily blinded to the inherent pain and the cost connected to the joys of marriage. Now others stand outside the fire with fear and trepidation at the thought of all that marriage entails, not understanding that the trials are worth the treasure. Nothing can compare to the peace, joy, and delight available in marriage, but neither will anything exact such a price."
Oh, yeah.
So when you're in it, sometimes you think of getting out, and when you're outside, it's like, oh, all my problems would be solved if I could just get married.
You know, Liz, I had a thought when writing that. I thought, you know, I almost wonder if the wonderful single people that I know that are not married and may not be married in this life, if they just didn't need the refiner's fire of marriage.
I doubt that's it.
And that they just get to the next stage and enjoy the blessings of marriage without all the challenges.
Nothing teaches us, does it? Like being in that intimate relationship, it's like looking in a mirror.
Yeah, all day, every day, 24/7. It doesn't go away.
Laura, you'll be back with us next Thursday, right? We're going to keep this up as long as we can.
Wonderful.
At 10:45 to 11:45, Laura Brotherson, you're an angel. Thank you for
Thanks, Liz, that you do.
Appreciate you. Take
God
care, Laura.
God bless everyone.
God bless you, Laura. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And I hope that she keeps up that good work, because I know she is. She's got a mission, and it cannot be easy writing about such a delicate subject matter, but she doesn't let anything stop her, and I am so proud. So please check out her website, www.strengtheningmarriage.com.